Welcome to the Quarterly Briefing, where we take a closer look at the financial stories behind the world's biggest public companies, powered by AI to make it smarter, faster, and more engaging. Our goal is to make financial data more accessible by demystifying the complexities of corporate finance and informing people about the dynamics of today's markets. This podcast is not financial advice. It's for entertainment and educational purposes only. If you're curious about how companies grow, stumble, or pivot in today's fast-paced markets, you're in the right place. This is the Quarterly Briefing, where AI meets numbers and numbers meet narrative.
Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive.
Yeah.
This time we're looking at Bank of America's third quarter 2024 performance.
Okay.
And as always, we are going straight to the source.
Right to it.
Their 10-Q filing.
Absolutely. And this one is particularly interesting.
Oh, really? What makes this one stand out?
Well, you know, Bank of America is such a bellwether for the whole financial sector.
Okay. Yeah, I see that.
So their performance this quarter really gives us a glimpse into the trends that are shaping the industry.
And that could impact, you know, my own financial decisions as an individual.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So let's start broad.
Sure.
Just how big is this bank?
Wow.
We always got to start with the big picture.
Right.
So their 10-Q lays it out.
Yeah.
As of September 30th of this year.
2024. Right.
They have $3.3 trillion in assets.
Wow.
And employ over 213,000 people.
That's a lot of people.
Right. And they're not just your typical bank on the corner.
No, they're not.
They operate across consumer banking, wealth management.
Global banking.
Global banking and even markets.
That's right. It's a diverse portfolio.
So that diversity, you think, plays a role in how we should be analyzing their performance this quarter?
Absolutely. It's all connected.
Okay. So let's get to the performance then.
All right.
What's the story the numbers are telling us?
Well,
for Q3 2024.
For Q3 2024, their net income applicable to common shareholders was $6.38 billion.
Okay.
And that translates to earnings per share of 82 cents.
$2.82. All right. And how does that compare to last year?
That's actually a decrease compared to Q3 2023.
Oh, so a decrease. Is that a bad sign?
Well, not necessarily. Okay. Well, when we look at the 9-month figures,
okay,
they actually show an increase year over year.
Hmm. So it's a mixed bag.
It is. It is. And it's important to dig into the why behind those numbers.
All right. So where do we start digging?
So one significant event this quarter was the Federal Reserve CCAR results.
The stress test.
Exactly. The comprehensive capital analysis and review.
Right.
So they put these banks through these stress tests.
To see how they would fare if things went south.
Exactly.
Got it.
And for Bank of America, this resulted in their stress capital buffer.
Okay.
Increasing to 3.2%.
3.2%. Okay. And remind me what that means exactly.
So that means they need to maintain a higher minimum CET1 capital ratio, which is a key indicator of their financial strength.
Oh, I see.
And their ability to weather a storm.
So higher capital requirements, how does that impact their strategy moving forward?
Well, it means they need to be very strategic
about
how they're using their capital.
Right.
You know, they need to balance holding enough to satisfy the regulators,
sure,
but also deploying enough to generate profits.
The tough balancing act.
It is.
Okay, so let's look closer at their income streams then.
Right.
Where are they making their money and how are those streams changing?
Right. So their income is divided into two main buckets.
Okay.
Net interest income and non-interest income.
All right. Classic banking, right?
That's right. Net interest income comes from the difference between what they earn on loans and what they pay out on deposits.
Makes sense.
And then non-interest income is things like fees, service charges, investment services, that sort of thing.
And what are we seeing there?
We are seeing an interesting trend in non-interest income.
Oh.
We're seeing an increase in service charges.
Really?
And investment and brokerage services.
Oh, interesting. So are people just paying more fees these days?
Well, it's likely a combination of factors.
Okay.
Higher average equity market valuations.
Okay. So a good stock market is helping?
Exactly. Leads to more investment activity and higher fees.
So they're benefiting from the market performance.
And we're also seeing an increase in transactional volume.
Meaning
people are moving their money around more.
Oh, I see.
Generating more fees for the bank.
So they're benefiting from both market performance and increased customer activity. Interesting. Okay, so now let's break down their performance by business segment.
Sure.
They've got four main ones, right?
That's right. We've got consumer banking,
okay.
Global wealth and investment management, global banking,
yep.
And global markets.
And each one playing a different role in their overall success.
Absolutely.
So let's start with consumer banking.
Okay.
What's the story there?
Well, one thing that jumps out is the lower revenue impacting their deposit segment.
Okay. Why is that?
Well, likely tied to shifts in interest rates.
Okay.
And customer behavior in this economic environment.
Right. Everyone's talking about interest rates.
Exactly. People are much more sensitive to rates these days.
Right. Looking for the best return.
Absolutely. And they're shopping around for the best deals.
So competition for deposits is heating up.
It is. It is.
Okay. And what about their lending business? Everyone's talking about mortgage rates these days.
Yes. Mortgage rates are definitely a hot topic.
Right.
And we're seeing a decrease in home equity production, both within consumer banking and across the whole corporation.
So is that a direct result of higher mortgage rates?
I think it's safe to say that's a major factor.
Making home ownership less affordable.
Exactly. Lower demand.
So less revenue from home equity.
Right.
What about their other consumer lending products?
Well, this is where it gets interesting.
Mm.
Despite the slowdown in home equity, consumer lending actually saw an increase in net income.
So how is that possible?
It seems counterintuitive.
It does.
But it really points to the complexity of their business.
Okay, so what's driving that increase if it's not home equity?
Well, it looks like a combination of factors.
Okay.
Higher loan balances in other areas.
Like
credit cards, for example.
Oh, so are they taking on more risk then?
That's a question we need to explore further
when
we dive into their risk management strategies.
Okay, so let's take a quick break.
All right.
And we'll come back and do just that.
Sounds good. Welcome back.
All right, so let's get into this risk management, because this is really the foundation of a healthy bank.
Absolutely.
Especially in uncertain times.
It's crucial.
And it feels like we're living in pretty uncertain times these days.
We are. We are. There are a lot of factors at play.
So how is Bank of America approaching risk management in this kind of complex landscape?
Well, they're facing a whole range of risks, right?
Yep.
We've got liquidity risk, credit risk,
yep.
market risk,
mm-hmm.
and they've really developed a pretty sophisticated system to manage these risks.
So let's break it down.
Okay.
Let's start with liquidity.
Right.
Because there's a lot of talk about recessions and financial instability.
Right.
How are they managing that risk?
So they've got this thing called Global Liquidity Sources.
Okay.
GLS for short.
GLS, okay.
It's basically a huge pool of high-quality liquid assets, like cash,
okay.
U.S. government securities.
Oh, so things that they can easily access.
Exactly.
Even if things get really bad.
Even in extreme market disruptions.
So it's like their safety net?
It is. It's designed to ensure they can meet their obligations no matter what happens.
Okay, that sounds pretty prudent.
Yeah.
But what about credit risk?
Right.
Are they lending responsibly?
Well, they're definitely being cautious.
Okay.
Their credit risk management focuses on both their consumer and commercial loan portfolios.
Got it.
And they're factoring in things like potential higher net charge-offs.
Okay, now remind me, what's a net charge-off?
It's basically the amount of debt they've written off as unlikely to be collected.
Oh, I see.
So basically bad debt.
Okay. Yeah. So they're anticipating potentially more bad debt.
Well, they're being prepared for that possibility.
And specifically, where are they seeing that risk?
Well, one area they're watching closely is credit card loans.
Okay.
And also the commercial real estate market, particularly office space.
Office space. Yeah. That's been a hot topic.
It has, with the pandemic and everything.
Right. People are working from home.
Exactly.
So what does that mean for the value of all those office buildings?
Well, it creates uncertainty. And uncertainty can lead to increased credit risk for lenders.
Because they don't know if those loans are going to be repaid.
Exactly.
So how are they adjusting their approach to kind of account for these evolving risks?
Well, they're being very thorough in how they determine their allowance for credit losses.
Okay.
They're using a combination of quantitative and qualitative methods.
So they're looking at the numbers, but also the bigger picture.
Right. They're looking at past loss experience.
Okay.
The current health of their loan portfolio, and they're running different economic scenarios.
Oh, interesting.
Including some pretty pessimistic ones.
So they're not just assuming everything's going to be rosy.
No, they're preparing for a range of possibilities.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now let's switch gears a bit.
Okay.
To a topic that might seem a little bit unusual in a banking discussion.
Right.
Climate risk.
Ah, yes, climate risk.
So why is climate change relevant to a financial institution like Bank of America?
Well, climate change is no longer just an environmental issue. It's a financial issue, too.
So it's not just about being eco-friendly?
No, it's about protecting their bottom line.
Because climate change poses real financial risks.
Absolutely. They've identified two main types of climate risk.
Okay.
Physical risks.
Okay.
And transition risks.
Okay. So explain those.
So physical risks are things like extreme weather events.
Okay. Hurricanes, floods, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
And transition risks.
Those are the risks associated with the shift to a low carbon economy.
Oh, I see.
So things like changes in policy.
Okay.
Technology. Consumer behavior.
So they're thinking about everything from hurricanes to carbon emissions.
They are. They have to.
So how are they managing all of this?
Yeah. So they've developed this climate risk framework.
Okay.
And it's integrated into their overall risk management structure.
So it's not just a separate thing?
No, it's part of their DNA now.
And are they taking any concrete actions?
Absolutely. Right. Well, they've committed to achieving net zero greenhouse gas emissions in their own operations by 2050.
That's a big goal.
It is. And they have interim targets for 2030.
Okay, so they're not just talking about it.
Yeah, they're walking the walk.
And what about their investments?
They're putting their money where their mouth is.
Okay.
They have a goal of mobilizing and deploying $1.5 trillion in sustainable finance by 2030.
Wow, $1.5 trillion.
Yeah, it's a significant commitment.
So they're financing renewable energy projects, supporting energy efficiency initiatives.
Exactly.
Investing in companies developing climate solutions.
That's right.
So they're really taking this climate risk seriously.
They are. It's a key part of their strategy.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here, from overall performance to risk management to climate change.
Yeah.
What are the key takeaways for our listener?
Well, I think Bank of America's performance this quarter really reflects the broader trends shaping the financial landscape.
So what should our listeners be paying attention to?
Well, I think Bank of America's performance this quarter really reflects the broader trends shaping the financial landscape. So what should our listeners be paying attention to?
Yeah. What can the average person, you know, trying to make smart decisions learn from this?
Well, you know, Bank of America is facing the same challenges a lot of us are. Yeah. Rising interest rates, inflation, and just economic uncertainty.
Yeah, nobody knows what's going to happen.
Exactly. So by seeing how they're adapting, it can give us some ideas.
So what are they doing? I mean, how are they adapting?
Well, they're managing risk.
Okay.
They're looking for opportunities in areas like sustainable finance.
Right. We talked about that.
So it's like a roadmap in a way.
Okay. So it's like a case study for all of us.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it.
So if you had to pick just one takeaway.
Oh, just one.
Yeah. The one thing our listeners should really focus on.
I'd say it's the emphasis on responsible growth.
Okay.
They're not just chasing the quick buck. They're thinking long term.
Right.
Balancing growth with risk management.
Mm-hmm.
Adapting to regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Considering their environmental impact.
So it's not just about profits anymore.
It's not. Stakeholders are demanding more.
Investors, customers.
A real one.
They want to see companies do the right thing.
Absolutely. And companies are realizing that they have to think about the bigger picture.
Yeah. Their actions have consequences.
All especially in finance.
Okay. So as we wrap up this deep dive into Bank of America's third quarter 2024 performance.
Yeah.
Here's a final thought for our listeners.
Okay.
How can you align your own financial decisions with these trends we've been discussing?
That's a great question.
Whether it's interest rates, sustainable investing, or just being more aware of the risks, knowledge is power.
It really is. The more you know,
the better decisions you can make.
Absolutely.
So there you have it, folks. That's our Bank of America deep dive.
Thanks for joining us.
We encourage you to check out the full 10Q if you want to learn more.
It's a fascinating read.
We'll be back soon with another deep dive into the world of finance.
See you then.
This is The Quarterly Briefing, a W Section podcast production. This podcast was generated completely with AI. If you like the podcast, please give us a like and tell your friends. If you have feedback or different companies you would like us to include in a future episode, please send us an email at idea@quarterlybriefing.com. Thank you for listening.